Wonderful. Good morning, everybody, on a rather unusual day. Just as people are tuning in, let me answer a few quick questions for you. First of all, yes, I'm not at home. I'm at the Conrad Center. And big reason for that, I'll get to one of the reasons for that a little bit later, but my house is a den of chaos right now, so I thought in order to live stream here, it'd be nice if I had a quiet place, and the Conrad Center is certainly quiet right now. A bit eerie driving into downtown Kitchener this morning. It's usually pretty quiet on Sundays, but it was very quiet this morning. So I know this is very different times, but feel free to interact, ask questions. I might try to get to those at the end. You can comment on the right of your screen there. One of the big questions, of course, what does this mean for the Richard Beck weekend? The truth is, right now, I have no clue. I have no idea. I talked to Richard on Thursday, and he's still willing to come. But I don't know. Things are changing rather rapidly. We'll see what happens. So I don't know about that, but we'll keep you up to date as that unfolds. And as far as Good Friday and Easter, next Sunday, kind of playing everything by ear at the moment. And just again, to some of those who are wondering, why did we cancel this morning, just quickly, right now, as things are changing rather rapidly, the perception is that we need to do our part to social distance ourselves from one another. And we want to be send every signal that we're for the community and we're for that larger strategy of trying to help stop COVID-19 here in Canada. So that's one of the reasons. The math also suggests that we're in the calm before the storm. So we're not sure what this will look like, but that's sort of what we're dealing with right now. So those were some of the big reasons why we decided to go this direction. Beyond that, we chose to cancel out of compassion, not fear. And I know it can seem odd that I'm about to give a sermon on fear not, while canceling and sitting here in an empty theater. But this is out of compassion, in a sense that we want to be with the community and do our part, however small, to help stop this. So let's get started. Sound good? These are such strange times that we find ourselves in, and talking to people, communicating with people, there's just such an anxiety out there. A lot of people wondering, is this really going to be as bad as they say it is? Are we overreacting? Are we underreacting? And on top of that, there's a lot of disappointment right now. I know so many people who had to cancel travel plans, and it's tough. And there's a lot of disappointment, a lot of anxiety. Even just being in here this morning, talking to the two Conrad Center staff here, these are very uncertain times for a lot of businesses. Right now, the theater schedule is pretty bare because everyone's canceling, and that sort of raises questions about whether the sustainability of some businesses, arts organizations. Another word for whatever it is we're feeling right now is fear, and we might not all experience fear in the same way, but I think all of us know what fear feels like. It's a terrible sensation. I don't think we would wish fear on anybody, and I know that a lot of people are genuinely afraid right now. And here's the thing, I have no idea how all of this is going to play out, but I do know that millions of people around the world are already suffering emotionally from this. And I want to be compassionate to that, even to the person hogging toilet paper in the grocery store, because fear makes us do odd things. It makes us react in ways sometimes that surprises even ourselves. And the next few weeks seem very uncertain. We don't want to be reckless, and so the plan going forward is we'll play it by ear, but I'm going to do my best to video stream on Sunday mornings. Hopefully we can just keep improving the process, and depending on how all of this unfolds, I mean, there's options, maybe making myself available every day to host a group chat on here, or on Facebook, or even if you just want to chat, someone to pray with you, maybe there's some things that we can do around that. We'll be looking into that in the next couple of weeks. So we'll try to keep a strong online presence for however long this carries on for. But I also want to say right up front that I think it would be a good idea for all of us right now to be praying for and showing mercy to people across the world who are running institutions, schools, governments, companies right now. I can't tell you how difficult it was to make the decision to cancel our service. And if that process was painful, just imagine what some people in these very high offices, people who are having to make really, really tough choices right now. And there's no playbook. There's no telling exactly what the right thing is. People are going to make mistakes. We're going to overreact. We're going to underreact. We're human beings right now in an impossible dilemma. And I would certainly not want to be a person faced with making any kind of massive, impactful decisions right now. So I think one of the first things we can do is just show a lot of compassion and grace and kindness to the people tasked with making very difficult decisions. Now, I got to tell you about my skunk. I have been at war with a skunk for the better part of a month now, and it's really wearing on me. Noticed about a month ago, whoever built our house, the addition at the back, did it very poorly. And there is a lot of room underneath our addition, and some skunk has decided to make that their home. And this skunk seems out of control. It's hosting parties down there. It's just smelling up the whole joint. So every night, right at around 11:30, I don't know if it's spraying for fun, but I'll be overwhelmed with a sense of skunk stink. And I decided I needed to get rid of this critter. And so I'm looking online for solutions. And one of the solutions I heard was that if you put a radio on talk radio right in the little den where the skunk is, that'll drive it out. So I hooked up a radio and I shoved it down the hole underneath our house and let it go. It played for an entire week, and still this thing is just stinking us out constantly, to the point where somebody commented that my clothes smell like skunk. So I'm just walking around kind of stinking here. And then it had big rainfall a couple weeks ago, and that killed the radio. So then I looked for other solutions. I got this thing from TSC called Critter Be Gone, and I spread it all over where I thought the skunk was, and that didn't work. And then I was looking up other solutions. I heard apple cider vinegar smells like skunk prey, whoever preys on skunks. So I doused our whole area with apple cider vinegar, and nothing is working. And so I called in. We were like, this can't go on. I called in a skunk removal service, and they took a look, and they gave us an estimate. I want to show you. I got it right here with me. It gave me an estimate of how much it's going to cost to remove this skunk. I don't know if you can see that right there. That is $2,700 to remove a skunk. And the worst part is this, they can secure the things around, but by law, apparently, they can only move a skunk 1 kilometer. So even if they get this thing and take it out, they got to drop it off down the block there. And so I'm thinking, I'm not paying $2,700. I've got to do this myself. And so I contacted a friend who has some experience in skunk removal, and I've got myself a trap right now out back. And I've been watching it night by night, and I can see this skunk all over our backyard. I can see it sniffing the trap. It won't go in. Now, theoretically, I saw that, Bronson. Theoretically, the skunk enters this trap, and it keeps its tail down. That way, it won't spray you. But how am I supposed to know? So I've got this trap sitting out there waiting for this skunk to go in, trap it. Then I'm going to have to pick it up, stick it in my trunk, and drive to Fergus. That's the plan right now. But here's the thing. Right now, I have never in my life captured a skunk. I have no idea what the protocol is. All I have is to rely on friends who have done this before. And I hope in the process I don't get sprayed. There's no guarantee about that. But all I have at the moment is a friend who has been through this kind of thing before, has trapped a skunk before, and can help me go through the process of bringing and capturing and eliminating this skunk. Now, why am I telling that story? To me, This whole situation we're dealing with COVID-19, it feels absolutely unprecedented, like something we've never faced before. I mean, not even, I was thinking back to 9/11. I don't believe even at 9/11 were we seeing this sort of wide-scale shutdown. And so this feels like something we've never faced before. And I think all of us are worried about the impacts this might have on us, on our families, our communities, our countries, our world. To me, it feels like me trying to trap this skunk. We've never done it before. And the only thing we can do as Jesus people, I think, is to look to those who have faced similar circumstances. And like trapping my skunk, there's no guarantee I'm not going to come out of this unscathed. But it might help us consider what it means for us. So this morning, whatever it's worth, a few thoughts at the start of this COVID-19 self-isolation lockdown. First is this: we are not the first to experience this kind of thing. And when we dig into church history, it's something to behold, because I was doing some reading this week on how churches have responded to pandemics in the past. And the reality is, throughout church history, the church has had more than its fair share of faults. But when you look to the history of how the church has responded to pandemics, it's beautifully something to behold. In 252, the plague ravaged the city of Alexandria, and Bishop Dionysius recounts how the church there responded. And so when a nearby town or village contracted the plague, some of them moved to that community to minister to the sick, even to the point of their own deaths. In his book, The Rise of Christianity, Rodney Stark quotes the early bishop saying this: "Most of our brother Christians shown unbounded love and loyalty, never sparing themselves and thinking only of one another. Heedless of danger, they took charge of the sick, attending to their every need and ministering to them in Christ, and with them departed this life serenely happy. For they were infected by others with the disease, drawing on themselves the sickness of their neighbors and cheerfully accepting their pains. Many, in nursing and curing others, transferred their death to themselves and died in their stead." Now, of course, in centuries past, they didn't have the same knowledge we do about how disease spreads, but what I'm incredibly impressed by is that the church's response has historically, in pandemics, been to make themselves available to help the sick. Previous centuries, the Black Death was an unparalleled plague. It ended up claiming the lives of over 200 million people, and the odds of survival were low. Ordinary activities ceased. People barred themselves in, very much like we're doing right now, and Ulrich Zwingli was on vacation in August 1519 when the plague reached his home city of Zurich, and it would end up claiming a third of the population. And everyone sort of barred themselves in or fled for the countryside, and rather than stay on vacation, Zwingli returned to Zurich with this calling to care for the ill. And friends warned him, "Don't go back there. You don't need to minister to them. That's a hopeless cause." But he insisted, because that's where his community was, that he would return there. And so he went and he administered medicine, he prayed for people, he comforted the sick. And this is a time, of course, of no hazmat suits or anything. He just wanted to be with his people, do what he could to help. In September, Zwingli caught the disease. It looked like he too would die. He lay bedridden for weeks. Somebody asked him what he wanted, and he wanted a quill, and he wrote this prayer, this song, while he was affected with the plague. It goes like this: "Help me, O Lord, my strength and rock. Lo, at the door I hear death's knock. Uplift thine arm once pierced for me, that conquered death and set me free. Yet if thy voice in life's midday recalls my soul, then I obey. In faith and hope, earth I resign, secure of heaven, for I am thine. My pains increased, haste to console, for fear and woe seize body and soul. Death is at hand, my senses fail, my tongue is dumb, now Christ prevail. Lo, Satan strains to snatch his prey, I feel his grasp, must I give way? He harms me not, I fear no loss, for here I lie beneath thy cross." Fortunately, Zwingli recovered. But what I'm struck by, again, is his insistence on being available to those in need despite the risks. And please don't hear me wrong this morning. I'm in no way suggesting that anyone ignore the very sensible warnings by medical authorities to wash our hands, practice social distancing, self-quarantine. But the history of the church tells the tale of the church being the ones who stepped up to help during times of crisis rather than people who stepped away. Church history tells the story of the church being the people who made themselves available to those in need. And so the second thing I want to add this morning is perhaps this situation gives us a unique opportunity to serve and love in very unique ways. Not recklessly, not foolishly, not going against advice or guidelines, but in ways that will be needed. I'm sure like all of you, you've probably read about 15,000 articles and read everything you can about COVID-19. We've all been reading a lot about this, but I was struck in particular by an article in Vox magazine that talked about the social loneliness pandemic we might be facing. This is what it said. Make no mistake, the rapid implementation of social distancing is necessary to flatten the coronavirus curve and prevent the current pandemic from worsening. But just as the coronavirus fallout threatens to cause an economic recession, it's also going to cause what we might call a social recession, a collapse in social contact that is particularly hard on the populations most vulnerable to isolation and loneliness, older adults and people with disabilities or pre-existing health conditions. Eric Klinenberg goes on to say, we're now officially in a pandemic, but we've also entered a new period of social pain. And there's going to be a level of social suffering related to isolation and the cost of social distancing that very few people are discussing yet. And I don't know what ways we can help in terms of medicine or helping with the sick, but I do know that this is going to be a very real phenomenon. And this could be our calling as the church. And so I would say, of course, it's incumbent on us to do what we can to limit the spread of the coronavirus, but it's also important that we do what we can to limit its social damage, its spiritual damage. And from what we know at the moment, it appears likely that the worst of the pandemic will be felt by the poor, the elderly, the sick, those whose immune systems are compromised. And most of us, of course, are going to be relying on personal networks to get us through this, be that family or friends. But when that happens, as Klinenberg says, when we rely on our personal networks, we guarantee the most isolated and disadvantaged people will be excluded. By definition, they are not in our networks. They're the least likely to get assistance. You know, one of the reasons that I wanted to come down here and do this from the Conrad Center is because of our friend Gary. And many of you, of course, if you've been at Nexus for a while, you know Gary. He's a part of us. And Gary... for those of you who don't know, he helps me set up the chairs every Sunday, and he's always the first one here, usually here before Conrad Center staff are here. I've tried to tell him 8:30 is when we'll go, but he's here at 5 to 8, sometimes 10 to 8, ready to go. And it was the same this morning, and I wasn't here when he first arrived, but this really upset Gary. This is one of the few things that's stable for him. This is one of the few things that he can count on. It's a job. It's a task for him that he can help set up chairs. And so when he arrived this morning, this was very upsetting, and he popped back around 9:30, 10, and we had a good chat. But he's very, he's rocked by this because this is what he does Sunday morning. And I know that for many of us, we can live stream, we can make it through this. This is a major inconvenience, but it's something we'll be able to get through. But for somebody like a Gary, this is totally shaking up his social world. And the reality is, I think we're about to learn a whole lot about who we are and what we actually value over the next few weeks and months. And we can play, a small but important role in ensuring that people here in this community, people on the streets we call home, are not left behind. You know, one of the things that we've started doing on our street, I live on Brubaker Street, and we've set up a Brubaker House Facebook chain. And what we're doing at the moment is trying to collect addresses, phone numbers for everybody on the street, so that way, should this become much more serious than it is already, those who don't have social support systems can count on us as neighbors to help them. should they need it. And I think that would be something that we here at Nexus could so easily do. And it's one of the things we want to make sure is that people are taken care of within our community. And I think it's something we can do as individuals is make sure in our small place, our street, our neighborhood, that we're caring for those who might not have support systems. And here's the thing that I've been learning, right, is that crises can elicit compassion and really bring people together, but it can also bring out the worst in us. It can make us callous. And I've already seen this to a staggering degree, regardless of what's going on in grocery stores, but some of the things I've seen online. Consider this tweet this week about who this virus affects most. This is a young man writing, "To be perfectly honest, and this is awful, but to us young, watching as the elderly and boomers over and over choose their own interests ahead of climate policy, kind of feels like they're wishing us to a death they won't have to experience. So all of this feels like a sad bit of fair play." That's ugly. And whether you call them the elderly or boomers or whatever, it's the rhetoric of dehumanization. From the elderly and boomers are lumped together as if they're this faceless mass of people. But when we talk about this, when we talk about people with weak immune systems, when we talk about the elderly, they're people with distinctive faces and voices. They're people with hopes and dreams, people who have memories, regrets, friendships. And from a faith perspective, for me, we know that our worth as human beings does not depend on or derive what we do or what we accomplish or produce. Each of us is infinitely valuable just because we're created in the image of God. We mattered before we were old enough to be economically productive. We go on mattering even after we cease to be. And the elderly, the isolated, those of us with weaker immune systems, those who are generally more susceptible to this, they deserve our respect, our protection, and our care. And so what might this look like for us as a community? I really hope that this is something that really bands us together as a community. If you find yourself sick, if you find yourself lonely, if you come down with the virus, please let us know. And I think one of the things we can do is turn our Nexus Facebook page, our updates and events page, into a bit of a way for us to keep tabs. If somebody's sick and needs groceries or medicine or refills on their medication, there's all sorts of ways that I think we can help one another, but it's going to depend on us ensuring that those who have the weakest social support systems are accounted for, that we're checking in on them. And I think this is, to be honest, I think this is a time for those of us who are younger that we can step up. Those of us who are least susceptible to the virus, because here's what I think we can do. At the very least, we can help those of us who have strong immune systems. We can be the ones on the front lines delivering meals to front porches, providing basic supplies, wiping things down if we need to. But on a graver level, I suppose, should the need arise, I want to be with you, and I want to pray with you, and I want to be with you in this in as much as I can, whether that's online or in serious cases, perhaps in person. If you get sick, let us know. If you're lonely, let us know. There's no shame in saying that. I think a lot of us are going to experience loneliness on a whole new level through this. And at the very least, we can be of aid to one another that way. So we're not going to be reckless, but we are going to help. And we're in this together, all of us. No one needs to be alone in this. And I've been thinking so much this week about the stories of Jesus and those with leprosy. And in the midst of this crisis, those stories are really speaking to me. This contagious disease and Jesus touching before he heals. And of course, I'm not suggesting we try to bring ourselves in close proximity and be a problem spreading this, but there's something so beautiful to me about Jesus reaching out and touching those contagious. And we might have to do that in a safe way, be it online, dropping things off on porches, whatever it is, but I think there's something really powerful and instructive there. One final word. As scary as all of this is, we people of the Jesus path, we need not fear death. And I don't want to jump there and make this graver than it already is, but if it gets as serious as some suggesting, we're going to be looking at that. And, you know, a friend of mine once told me, it made me laugh because it boggled my mind. He said to me one time, you know, there are worse things in life than dying. And that confused me. And yet, the more I think about it, for the person of faith, that's indeed true. Because we trust that death's sting has been forever blunted by Jesus' resurrection. Death is not the end of the story. And again, this doesn't mean we ignore the severity of the pandemic. It doesn't mean we be silly or foolish or reckless in how we act. It doesn't mean any of that. What it does mean is that we don't have to fear this. We don't panic. We're not driven by fear. It's interesting to me in Scripture, whenever God or an angel or heaven wants to speak to humanity, whether they show up in a cloud or an angelic being, whatever it is, invariably the first words heaven, God, angels, whatever speak to humans are fear not. It's like they know we as humans can be skittish. And it's this idea of fear not. 1 John 4 says, God is love, and all who live in love live in God, and God lives in them. And as we live in God, our love grows more perfect. So we will not be afraid on the day of judgment or on the day of virus, but we can face him with confidence because we live like Jesus here in this world. Such love has no fear because perfect love expels all fear. This is one of those verses that always seems so cliche to me. You hear it get tossed around. And right now, there's, I think, plenty of reasons to be afraid, anxious. What does that mean? I don't know entirely, but I found C.S. Lewis this week quite compelling. You know, C.S. Lewis was one of the first writers I fell in love with. I loved his Narnia books as a child, and when I got older, his works on faith were some of the very first I ever read. And to be honest, I haven't read his books in years, but he was one of the first writers in my own life that spoke of the Christian faith in a way that was just so compelling to me. And writing at the height of the Cold War, and of course, there's all these pervasive fears about nuclear holocaust, I find these words by Lewis both inspiring and captivating. And I hope I can conduct myself in much the same way that Lewis imagines here, but he says this: if we're all going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let that bomb, when it comes, find us doing sensible and human things. Praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing the children, playing tennis, chatting to our friends over a pint and a game of darts, not huddled together like frightened sheep and thinking about bombs. They may break our bodies, but they need not dominate our minds. Oh, I love that. And I love that. I confess, I'm sure like many of you, this has absolutely dominated my mind for the past 72 hours or more. It's just been there constantly. And there's a certain sort of anxiety loop about that. The more we read, the more we explore and research this, it sort of drives this fear loop. And so, of course, yes, we practice social distancing, follow all precautions, but I think there's something here about what it means to not fear, and that's to not let it dominate our minds. And even if the virus should find us, as Lewis says, let it find us doing sensible and human things, praying, working, teaching, enjoying a beer, playing tennis, not huddled together like frightened sheep. That seems to me how I want to respond. Not allowing myself to be in this endless loop of panic. Doing everything I can, everything we're told to do, washing our hands, all that stuff. But living life, doing sensible human things. And so here's what we're going to do at Nexus. I'm borrowing this final section from Naheed Nenshi, the mayor of Calgary, when they were facing the floods there. He sort of adapted this from Friday Night Lights, the TV show. But he talked at that moment about moving forward with clear heads, clean hands, open hearts. And I think that's a great call. Clear heads. The reality is this: we're going to face reality. Forward facing, but not fearful. Prepared, but not panicked. And, you know, it's very natural to fear what we don't know, and so I don't want any of us to judge ourselves harshly for those feelings of anxiety or fear that we have. But not allowing ourselves to act out of it. And we'll each hopefully engage in practices that, for us, move us out of fear and towards trust, move us out of fear and towards love. Clean hands. We're going to wash our hands a lot. I don't know about you, my hands are chafed. I've been washing them so much. I've had to get some lotion. We're going to practice that. We're going to practice safe social distancing. But more than that, we will act where we can, where it's appropriate. Do what we can do, knowing we're not in control of anything other than ourselves and how we act. And then finally, open hearts. The reality is this, we're going to be changed through this. As individuals, as a culture, we're going to be changed. The only question is whether we're going to be changed for better or worse. And I think who we become in this is just as important as what we do. It's possible to do all the right things, but be so full of fear and in hoarding resources that we fail to be a good member of the larger community. It's possible we can wash our hands 100 times a day, stay safe distance away, and yet really be living and acting in fear and only thinking about ourselves. But the reality is this, we're Jesus people, and that's not who we're called to be. We're here to serve, we're here to welcome, we're here to comfort, and I want and hope that we as a community can continue to do that. And so we're going to take precautions. I don't know what it's going to look like for the next few weeks, the next few months. We might have to adjust in a way we never imagined. But we're not going to stop walking the Jesus path because of a virus. And that is, I believe, how we'll get through this together. Finally, please feel free to contact me or anyone on staff or leadership. I'm going to be speaking and working with staff and leadership over the next little while to help ensure everyone in this community is properly taken care of and has everything that we need, be that food or medicine or prayer or just a listening ear. 519-841-9819. That's my phone number. bradw.nexus@gmail.com. We want to be available, whether it's here online doing something like this, or I don't know what the situations will call for, but the thing that's so important right now is that we make sure none of us feel alone and have access to the community. That's about it. I thought I would do some questions. I'm just, if anyone's got a questions. I'm just looking through the comments right now. Oh no, it sounds like this was freezing on some of you. I apologize for that. Sorry, I'm distracted. I can't speak and read at the same time. Hopefully in the next few weeks we can figure this out. This YouTube live streaming thing was a bit of a new experiment. Hopefully we can make it even better, maybe more interactive next time. Hopefully this if this is the way we need to communicate in the future, we can do that on Sunday mornings. We can do that every evening if we need to. We'll stay tuned. We'll let you know what we're going to do and some of the next steps that we're taking. Does anyone have any questions? Susan, that's great. I've talked to more of you on here than I would have in person at the Conrad Center. Yeah, Wes, lots of ideas. Great. We're going to need, and I'm wondering if we actually can turn our Nexus events and updates page into a bit of a sharing. Hi, kids. Hi, Zoe. Hux and Eve. And maybe turn this into a bit of a community marketplace where we can share ideas, where we can make sure everyone's taken care of. You know, it could be as simple as, hey, I got to go do a grocery run. Anybody need anything? I'll drop it off at your porch. I don't know what it looks like, but maybe there's some things that we can do that way. But we'll start exploring those over the next few days and weeks. Yeah, great. Let me close. Is Ruthie on here? By the way, if Ruthie's on here... She has, I wish I had gotten a time, but Ruthie has written some incredible prayers throughout all of this. I would suggest checking out her page. They've been absolutely beautiful prayers. I wish I had copied them down. But let me close in a word of prayer. This is actually from Ted Loader. And this prayer is called, "Remind Me of Your Steady Power." It says this: "Oh God, this is a hard time, a season of confusion, a frantic rush to fill my closets, my pantry, my mind, only to find myself empty. Give me hope, Lord, and remind me of your steady power and gracious purposes, that I may live fully. Renew my faith that the earth is not destined for dust and darkness, but for frolicking life and deep joy, that being set free from my anxiety for the future, I may take the risks of love today." Amen. Go in peace, everyone.